The Capitol Committee hearing for April 23rd is called to order. Members, we do not have a quorum, and so we'll move on to our informational hearings today. We have 19 individual bills. We may have amendments for reference. Each bill will be allotted 3 to 4 minutes. First up is Representative Gottfried, and then Representative Johnson, and then Chair Davids. Welcome, Representative. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Representative David Gottfried. Today I am here to discuss House File 2985. This is the John Rose Minnesota Oval is a regional center for ice skating and hockey enthusiasts and aspiring professionals. It is 32 years old, and at 32 years old, the Oval is facing some challenges associated with an aging HVAC system and roof. In addition, the restrooms, which the original restrooms, which are still in use today, are not entirely compliant with the American Disabilities Act, which poses significant hurdles to skating and hockey practitioners and fans with disabilities. So family coming in to watch, you know, friends coming in to watch their families if they have disabilities. It's a very, very challenging thing to use the restrooms there. So today I'm asking, this committee to consider a $1.125 million appropriation to the Oval to address these particular issues and ensure the center's long-term viability. With that, I will now turn it over to my testifier, Parks and Recreation Director of the City of Roseville, Matthew Johnson, to speak in more detail about the significance of the Oval and this project. Thank you.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Matthew Johnson, and I'm the Parks and Recreation Director with the City of Roseville. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about these important updates that we're proposing for the John Rose Minnesota Oval. As many of you surely know, the John Rose Minnesota Oval is truly a one-of-a-kind facility. It is one of only 4 full-size speed skating facilities in the United States and the only full-size refrigerated bandy rink in the United States. It, at 110,000 square feet of refrigerated ice, it is the largest refrigerated ice sheet in North America. The Oval serves as home to a number of key regional groups, including the Greater Minnesota Speed Skating Association, the Midway Speed Skating Association, the United States Bandy Association, and multiple local hockey and figure skating groups. It has hosted national and international speed skating events and has been the training ground for numerous prospective and up-and-coming Olympians. In addition to elite athletes, more than 20,000 skaters from across the state of Minnesota, from first-time skaters to competitors at all skill levels, utilize the facility. Since initial planning and construction, the Oval has been a joint venture between the City of Roseville and the State of Minnesota, with the City handling the operating cost, while the State has regularly supported capital upgrades when needed. In 1993, the facility was constructed with state dollars, and on 4 different occasions, the State has funded capital updates. In 2018, as the Oval turned 25 years old, and mechanical elements were reaching the end of their useful life, the city commissioned a full condition assessment to make sure that the facility was able to thrive into its next 25 years. As a result of that study, at the time, the city sought $5 million of support. In 2020, the legislature graciously approved $3.9 million for phase 1 of that project, which tackled updates to refrigeration, drainage, and safety systems. I'm proud to state that in 2022, that project was completed on time and under budget. Today, we are seeking the remaining $1.125 million to finish that plan to replace roofs that are currently leaking, HVAC systems that are beyond the end of their expected lifespan, and improve restrooms so that they are better able to serve the large events we host and accessible, meeting the current ADA standards, and better able to serve individuals of all ability levels. With more variable winters, the Oval's refrigerated ice has never been more vital to Minnesota and across the state. This investment will extend its life, improve accessibility, and preserve this unique asset for decades to come. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you, Director. Seeing no questions, closing comments.
Not many closing comments. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I would encourage you to consider this as part of a larger bonding bill going forward, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Gottfried. Next up, we have 2 bills for Representative Johnson. First up is House File 441. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members. I'm pleased to present House File 441, a $7 million bonding request to fund essential capital improvements at the Duluth Area Convention Center, also known as the DEC. This project will significantly boost energy efficiency, potentially cutting heating costs by 40% and saving over $1 million in the next decade. It also addresses key accessibility issues in Symphony Hall by replacing outdated 1966 seating with modern, wider seats and expanded accessible areas. Long overdue elevator and escalator improvements will further enhance the guest experience, something that is central to the DEC's mission of hospitality. As you hear from today's testifier, please remember that the DEC is a state-owned facility with a unique governance structure. The state owns the buildings, the city of Duluth owns the land, and the oversight is provided by a board appointed by the governor and the mayor. Joining me today is Dan Hartman, Executive Director of the DEC.
Thank you.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Committee and Chair. My name is Daniel Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. So thank you and hello again to many of you. And it's a beautiful, bright morning. So I want to go into it real quick. So we have this $7 million request in front of you. But when you think of the DEC, a lot of people think of it as one venue. It's actually 10 different venues. And so think of it as we are a large regional center. This is 2 6,000-seat ice arenas. This is 2 convention centers. We have a 40,000-square-foot expo hall. And this is just a sampling of some. And so just I want you to understand the magnitude of this. Just last year, we saw over 500,000 visitors. And for the northern region of the state, that's a $45.2 million impact. So this is a bigger deal than a lot of folks, I think, give it credit sometimes. And just to also get an understanding of the past, this goes back all the way to 1966. So we're long overdue on a lot of these repairs, and hence why we'll probably get to know each other over time. But we're here to really talk about accessibility issues and energy conservation. Representative Johnson did a really good job outlining a lot of these things. To get a little bit more specific, on the accessibility side, we have significant repairs to make on our elevators, our escalators. These are not exciting projects, but folks who know, these are very expensive high items. And so we just don't have the capacity to pay for these significant, frankly, full upgrades. And then in addition, in Symphony Hall, that dates back to 1966. Those seats are from 1966. And unfortunately for all of us in the room, we've all are a different size than we were in 1966. And so we need to upgrade these things to fit all of our modern standards. And frankly, we need more accessible seating areas in general as well. It's a little sad for me when we have a Veterans Day ceremony and all the World War II vets can't even get into the room to sit down because there's literally no seating for them. And so we need to make this, we owe them that. In addition to that, the real big one in front of me is that for some reason in the 1990s, they redid all the pipes and they added these Victaulic rings. Are these like these little, I actually brought the prop and left it on the floor, of course, because I'm cool like that. But anyways, the rings were bad from the beginning. And whenever there's a change in the heating, these rings leak. And frankly, now they're getting old. And so now they rupture and break. So either a dramatic safety hazard for my staff. But also, we are keeping these things heated at 190 degrees throughout the summer. I'll repeat that. So in the summer, we are heating the building. And so then we have to spend money on cooling to cool down the building in the summer. It is just as insane as I am referring to this. And so if we can fix this, this will reduce my heating bill by 40% a year because I'm not trying to heat the place in the summer. And so what we're going to do is install welded pipes with shutoff valves so that we can turn this heated water off. So as simple as that sounds, that is probably my most drastic thing because it's a safety concern. And also, it's just obviously we need to fix this. And that's part of the problem of having a building that goes back to 1966 is we got a lot of stuff to fix. So I wish I was coming to you with a new exciting building, but that is not it. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Director. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. We toured this a couple years ago when we were there. The interim stuff that breaks, you guys are paying for it, and
correct.
This is the state building. So,
Director Hartman.
Thank you.
Committee and Chair, Representative. We internally are trying to pay for all the stuff as it ruptures currently, but this whole system is $2.5 million, and so that's a hard thing for us to do. And just as a reminder that came up before, we are the only state authority that runs a place like this. So Rochester, St. Cloud, Minneapolis, St. Paul, those are actually city facilities. But in Duluth, it's called the Duluth Convention Center, but really it's a state authority and has a board appointed by the state and the mayor. So we're a little different anomaly in a lot of ways. Thank you.
Quick closing comments, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, chairs and members. This, like we said, this is a state-owned facility. Investing in especially some of those HVAC or heating components will save it money in the long run, maybe allowing them to address more of these issues on their own, and encourage any support we can get.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Next on the agenda, House File 3125, Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the committee. I'm excited to present House File 3125, a bonding request for the Housing and Redevelopment Authority of Duluth, in partnership with the Union Gospel Mission to construct a much-needed community engagement center. This $8.8 million investment would directly serve individuals experiencing homelessness, providing comprehensive resources such as a commercial kitchen, warming center, health facilities, laundry and hygiene services, and supportive spaces for education and outreach. The center will be strategically located across from the St. Louis County Government Center, enhancing accessibility and effectiveness. Additionally, above the center, Mission Heights Housing will offer 40 units of permanent supportive housing, creating stability through ongoing support and case management. Joining me today is Katie Hagland, Executive Director of the Union Gospel Mission, who will be testifying, and Jill Keppers, Executive Director of the Duluth HRA, who is available to answer any questions.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the committee. My name is Katie Hagland, and I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of Union Gospel Mission in Duluth. Joining me today is Jill Keppers, the Executive Director of Duluth HRA. I'd like to express our gratitude to Representative Johnson for authoring this important bill, and my many thanks to all of you for the opportunity to speak with you today in strong support of House File 3125, which seeks $8.8 million in state bonding to fund the construction of a new homeless engagement center in partnership with the Duluth HRA. For over 100 years, Union Gospel Mission has been the safety net to the people of Duluth and the surrounding Northland. We've been proud to offer food, shelter, and life-saving support to neighbors who are experiencing homelessness, hunger, and hardship. This project represents the next chapter in that ongoing legacy of service. The new Mission Engagement Center, strategically located directly across from the St. Louis County Government Center, is designed with one core mission in mind: to meet people where they are, offer them immediate support, and provide long-term pathways to stability. The Engagement Center will feature a commercial kitchen and dining hall, indoor and outdoor warming spaces, free health care and social services, laundry and hygiene facilities, and classrooms for life skills, job readiness, and recovery support. Above the Engagement Center will be Mission Heights, 40 units of permanent supportive housing, complete with wraparound case management services to ensure that our residents have not just a place to live, but that they stay housed and have the support they need to thrive. The need for this project is undeniable. From 2013 to 2023, St. Louis County saw a 41% increase in overall homelessness and a staggering 157% increase in chronic homelessness. Last year alone, over 1,100 individuals used Duluth's warming center. More than half of Northland residents are rent burdened, struggling to keep up with rising housing costs. And tragically, 1 in 9 children in our region goes to bed hungry each night. This project won't just address these urgent needs, it will also help us leverage over $15.6 million in housing infrastructure bond funding, multiplying the state's investment and maximizing our community's capacity to respond to this crisis. This is truly a community-wide project, with land provided from the City of Duluth, development support from Duluth HRA, operational commitments from St. Louis County, and strong backing from local healthcare systems, businesses, and community leaders. With your support, we can create not just a building, but a place of hope, healing, and housing. A place where no one will be turned away, but instead welcomed in. A place where dignity will be restored and futures will be rebuilt. This is not just about constructing a new facility. It's about giving people a new beginning, a new home, using the same hope that has guided us for over a century. Thank you for your time, your leadership, and your thoughtful consideration of this vital investment in the people of the Northland.
Thank you, Director. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. When the bill was going through, I remember sitting with Representative Howard and saying, you know, I don't have any homeless stuff in Ely. We don't have it. Small communities don't. Duluth and Hibbing gather most of those folks. When there's nowhere to stay, they find somewhere to stay. And this is, for all practical purposes, a big portion of northern Minnesota gathers these folks that are at the end. But one of the questions I have is your comment here with help leverage the $15.6 million. Is the $8.856 the match, or is that something with that, Mr. Chair? Just curious how that dollar amount and how it fits. Thank you.
Director Hagman.
I'll defer to Director Keppers.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, Representative, and committee members. So the $8.8 million is to help us construct the engagement center. And then along with that, so that's the lower level of the building. The upper level, the HRA is functioning as developer of the project, and that will be for 40 units of housing, and that we anticipate costing around $16 million. But one project can't happen without the other. So as we construct the lower level and then apply for funds, which will either be housing infrastructure bonds or low-income housing tax credits or a combination of two, that's how it will match each other and create the overall project.
Director Keppers, can you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Oh, sorry. Jill Keppers, Executive Director of the Housing and Redevelopment Authority. Housing Authority will be the owner of the building, which is in compliance then with the general obligation bonds and keeps in compliance with the United States or the state constitution.
Thank you. Quick close the comment, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, chairs and members, for the opportunity to present this. This is a much needed project for our community. And it's one of those that truly has partnerships throughout a lot of different organizations working together and supporting it, and love any help we can get. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up, we have three bills from Chair Davids. And then members, can I have you guys start moving back towards the back behind the dais? We'll have Chair Katiza Watun and then Representative Clardy after that. Welcome, Chair Davids. First bill up will be House File 2046. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You have the 2046?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2046 is for to put a bridge back in the state park. It was removed. It was not, it was basically condemned because you couldn't take any auto traffic. So what we're trying to do here is get that bridge back there for foot traffic. And I have with me Mr. David Kelleher from the Historical Society, who would like to make a few comments.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Thanks for taking a few minutes to hear this bill. This is a very important historic bridge that, as Representative Davids mentioned, is a really important connection point between a state historic site, historic Forestville historic site, and a state park, the Forestville Mystery Cave State Park. The road leading right through the middle of the historic site is a county road, and the bridge is part of that county road, so we have a convergence of jurisdictions and really a good partnership that has developed between DNR, Historical Society, and Fillmore County. As Representative Davids mentioned, the bridge has failed. The abutments that hold the bridge up on the banks of the Root River have disintegrated over the 125 years of the life of the bridge. This is a very significant bridge. It's on the National Register of Historic Places, and it's an important tourism attraction between the state park and the state historic site. This will be the future route, we hope, of the Root River Trail, which has been extremely successful for the region, and we hope to have that extended further out to the historic site. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that is the summary you have in your packets, some images of the bridge. You might say, well, it's just an old bridge, but this is a really significant part of our engineering history. And by preserving features like this, we can learn about engineering, we can learn about the environment. We're designing the bridge, including the abutment, to withstand future flooding, because we know that the Root River floods occasionally. So we're anticipating that to make sure that the bridge sticks around for another 125 years. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions about the project.
Thank you, Director. So, you know, questions. Quick closing comments, Chair Davids.
Yes, thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franzen. I hope you'll give this consideration when you put the bill together.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, Chair Davids, House File 2404. Please proceed, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2404. 404. I do have an amendment on the A1 amendment, if we could put that on to get in the... basically, what the A1 amendment does is it, instead of saying Preston to Carmona, it says Preston to Forestville, Mystery Cave State Park. We need to extend that line a little bit.
Sounds good, Mr. Chair. We are just, since we're not moving any bills, we'll just reference the amendment for staff. Should this be considered in the future, we'll have the language. Thank you, and please proceed.
Okay, thank you so very much. I have Mr. Adam Wilder, Mayor of Mabel, Minnesota, who would like to make a few comments on the importance of House File 20404, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thanks for having me today. I am Adam Wilder. I am the mayor for the city of Mabel. Just a few comments on why this bill would be very important to our area. So right now there are currently two state trails down there, the Root River State Trail and the Harmony Preston State Bike Trail Systems. However, they don't extend through a few of the southeast Minnesota towns, most notably Canton, Mabel, Spring Grove, and Caledonia. So this wouldn't only impact my city, but also the cities around us. Over the years, there have been a few fundraising or kind of some communication between the area towns to try to fundraise to be able to move forward with this. But just with the sheer size of this project, it's just not really capable from a city standpoint. Constructing this trail extension would have a huge impact on our small rural area. It would not only benefit the current businesses, but it would also allow for businesses to hopefully move in and have some economic growth in these small areas. We're not immune to it like most of greater Minnesota. If you drive down our main street, there's not many businesses in our towns anymore. Referring back to a study from Minnesota Department of Transportation and the University of Minnesota Extension, in 2014, the bicycling industry brought in $777.9 million in 2014 to the state of Minnesota. So these dollars could have huge impact on our local area. These communities are also smaller, aging communities, and if provided the opportunity with this bike trail, it could allow for growth and to attract younger families to our communities. It's also in this area, we have U.S. Highway 52 and State Highway 44. And if you've driven in that area, you might notice that people are on those highways running, biking, or exercising. So this is also a safety hazard that we could also mitigate with the passing of this bill. Thank you again for your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Trail guy here, big trails, love trails. Understand them. I'm from northern Minnesota. We got trails everywhere. Biking, hiking, snowmobile, ATV, you name it, we have it. What are your plans for upkeeping it if it is built, and who's going to be responsible? Do you have a trail authority, or is it how is it put together right now?
Mayor,
sorry. Thank you.
So this is all really new to us. We would hopefully do extend on to the state trail system. Greg Davids has been a great proponent of bike trails as well, so he might be able to answer that question better than me.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Scraba. It would be a state bike trail, so the state would be responsible for the maintenance down the road. And if I could go to nonpartisan staff, I believe that it's already designated, this loop is already designated as eligible to be a state trail.
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davis, I will double check on that. I don't
okay.
have the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my entire district is designated for state trails. I think it is, but you can check that out.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Davids. Thank you for working on this. It is really a safety thing down there. Spend a lot of time on that section of 52. Will this tie into the Iowa system then, or is this kind of the last link? Does this go from like Hanson's Farm and the cave? Is this kind of the last? I know you've been working so hard on this. It's exciting to see what it'll be.
Thank you, David. Mr. Chairman and Chair Lilly. It would be east of the Hanson Estates. And it's We currently have a trail going from Harmony down to the Iowa Trail to hook in with the state of Iowa, which we're pretty excited about. This takes us further east.
Quick close of the comments, Chair Davids.
Appreciate your support, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, the final bill for Chair Davids, House File 3128. Please proceed, Chair Davids.
Thank you very much. And I think we have the city administrator on the available here. And this is for the city of Lanesboro. The city of Lanesboro has a project, and I'm sure most all of you have been to the city of Lanesboro. The bonding tours have been down there in the past. What they're looking for is some funds to help out with Trunk Highway 250. Trunk Highway 250 is the main street of Lanesboro, and the MnDOT is going in and redoing that whole Highway 250 through the city. And as you can imagine, there's some enormous costs. Lanesboro is a city of between 700 and 800 people, and this really puts a stress on them financially. So we're looking, and this has been done in the past, different areas, some help for their infrastructure as this project moves forward. And I think we have city administrator.
Welcome, city administrator. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, my name is Mitchell Walbridge, city administrator for Lanesboro, Minnesota. Thank you, Chairman Lee and co-chair Franzen and members of the committee for allowing me to speak today. I'm a lifelong resident of Lanesboro and recently moved into the role of city administrator, which is a privilege to serve in. I'm here today in support of House File 3128, which would appropriate funds for a critical infrastructure improvement project in our city along Minnesota Trunk Highway 250. The project addresses the complete reconstruction of sanitary sewer and water distribution systems, including surface and roadway restoration in one of the most vital corridors of our city. It covers Parkway Avenue, Ashburn Street, and a failing water main extension into the neighborhood known as Little Norway. These systems are approaching 100 years old. They are the original water and sewer infrastructure and are in the state of increasing failure risk. They support essential services like our public school campus, city hall, and most notably our downtown commercial district, which serves the economic, as the economic and cultural heart of Lanesboro. But this is not just about pipes and pavement. Lanesboro is a regional tourism hub, drawing thousands of visitors each year to enjoy our historic downtown, the Root River State Trail, and the outdoor recreation on the Root River. Small businesses, including lodging, restaurants, and outfitters, depend on reliable infrastructure to serve both the residents and tourists alike. Reconstructing these utilities in tandem with MnDOT's scheduled highway work is not only smart governance, but it's financially responsible. Delaying our infrastructure project would mean tearing up newly reconstructed roads in just a few years down the line and burdening local taxpayers with the full cost. Our city has not stood still in the face of these infrastructure needs. In 2022, we completed construction on a new wastewater treatment facility that replaced what had been the oldest operating mechanical wastewater plant, which was a $4 million investment on the city's part. That same year, we completed a street and utility replacement project on our residential and business districts, which required $600,000 in local investment. In Lanesboro, we're doing our part, but for a small city like ours, this level of infrastructure reinvestment has elevated our debt per capita burden significantly, and we're being diligent and forward-thinking, but the financial strain is real here in Lanesboro. By aligning this Highway 250 utility work with MnDOT's scheduled roadway reconstruction, we're pursuing a financially responsible strategy that avoids tearing up the newly completed roads in just a few years. This isn't just about Lanesboro, though. It's about preserving access to one of Minnesota's premier tourism destinations, a rural economic driver that attracts visitors from across the state and the region to enjoy our community, the Root River, and the Root River State Trail. Thank you for considering this request, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, City Administrator. Seeing no questions, quick closing comments, Chair Davids.
I'd really appreciate your support. The City of Lanesboro is a regional area for tourism, and they have made every effort to for infrastructure in other areas. Like the administrator said, this is very much needed as we go forward, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Next up, House File 210, Chair Katiza Watum.
Thank you, chairs and members.
Welcome, Chair. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members. thank you for allowing me to present this really important project and request for the committee for my community of Eden Prairie. I have my police chief, Matt Sackett, here with me today to discuss further the details of this regional storage facility that that would be housed in connection with our Eden Prairie Police Department, but it would impact many of the other departments in the region as well.
Welcome, Chief. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franz, and members of the committee. I am Matt Sackett, the police chief with the City of Eden Prairie. I want to begin by thanking Representative Katiza Watun, who has been a strong advocate for the needs of our community. I'm honored to be here to share a bit about the City of Eden Prairie's request for state assistance for an important regional asset. House File 210 requests $2.1 million to assist in the design and construction of a regional public safety garage to store specialized public safety equipment that serves the region and multiple communities. We are proud to work closely with surrounding communities to assist in police, fire, public safety, and natural disaster events. The City of Eden Prairie is in need of a centralized storage facility to house multiple pieces of public safety equipment that serve the city and surrounding communities. Many pieces of search and rescue, as well as tactical and de-escalation equipment, will be stored within the department project. In 2026, the city will take delivery of a new police and fire mobile command center, which will be one of the most modern and well-equipped in the area. In Eden Prairie, we are also considered an area leader in our use of drones for search and rescue. That ability, combined with this new mobile command center, will be a tremendous asset for the region, especially in times of emergency response and natural disaster. This new space would also house our crisis negotiations and tactical response equipment that we utilize as part of our regional emergency response team. The team is comprised of five southwestern Hennepin County suburbs serving more than a quarter million population. Our team is seen as a leader in robotics and technology use for de-escalation, and those abilities often bring us to a much broader area of the region. The mobile command center will also be a valuable asset for the surrounding police, fire, and EMS partner agencies, and will be housed in this specialized response garage. The specialized equipment needs to be stored in a central location near the police department for the best possible response outcomes. The mobile command center and other rescue vehicles and equipment planned for this garage do not fit inside a typical garage or the existing facilities provided on site. The appropriations would allow for the addition to our building and would complete this important project designed to service the many areas in the region. Again, thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franzen, for the hearing today and this chance to discuss House File 210. I will do my best to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Chief. Seeing no questions, close the comments, Chair Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think, you know, the Chief did a great job of explaining the importance of this project, not only to the community of Eden Prairie, but surrounding communities, including Edina, St. Louis Park, Hopkins, and Minnetonka. And I just continue to be really grateful for our first responders and law enforcement officers for the work that they do, not only in Eden Prairie, but all across the state, and really appreciate your consideration of funding this project.
Thank you, Chair Katiza Watun. Next on the agenda, House File 218 with Representative Clardy, and then after that, we will have Leader Long and then Representative Ryer. So can you both make your way behind the table? Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you, Chair Franzen, for allowing me to present this bill on for my community of West St. Paul. It's House File 218. We are looking for a central gathering place in our city. The YMCA presented or held that gap for a long time, and then once it disappeared, the city's been trying to come up with something to fill that space so citizens can gather. And I have a couple testifiers here today. Would you like me to introduce them?
So I think we have the mayor. Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franzen and members of the committee for hearing this bill today and for the opportunity to speak to support your request, this request. My name is Dave Napier. I'm the mayor of West St. Paul. I'd like to thank Representative Clardy for authoring this bill and her ongoing support of our city. West St. Paul lost a community gathering space when our local YMCA closed several years ago. Since then, we have been working to develop a solution for that site that would meet the needs of our community for gathering and create a what we're calling heart of the city of West St. Paul. This development site includes a public plaza, a playground, a water features, connections to the surrounding regional trail system, linkages to public transportation, and will include space for new retail and housing opportunities, all with the goal of prioritizing incorporating communal amenities and spaces that will serve not just West St. Paul, but the entire region. Located directly adjacent to the River-to-River Greenway Trail, this site will become a destination for pedestrians and bikers who are enjoying that one of the top trails in our area. We are seeking your assistance as we work to replace this much-needed public space. We understand that the committee requires a local match and potential phasing of this project. Thank you for your consideration of our request. I am happy to answer any questions as well. I have our city manager, Nate Briquette, here answer any technical questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Seeing no questions, quick closing comments, Representative Clardy.
Can you imagine a city without a gathering place? I hope your answer is no, and I hope we move to a no. So thank you for your support on this.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. Next up, we have Leader Long, House File 474. Welcome. Please proceed.
Morning, Mr. Co-Chair. Co-Chair Franzen and committee members, thank you so much for the opportunity to present to you today. So each state gets to send two statues to Congress to represent them. Minnesota's current two statues are Maria Sanford, an education leader installed in 1958, and Henry Maurer Rice, installed in 1916. Like Minnesota, many states have chosen to submit one civic leader and one political leader. For example, Kansas has sent Amelia Earhart and Dwight Eisenhower. California has sent Father Junipero Serra and Ronald Reagan. Mr. Maurer Rice was an early leader in our state in helping facilitate statehood and served as one of its first U.S. senators. But in the more than a century since Mr. Maurer Rice's statue was sent, Minnesotans have accomplished much on the national stage. I believe it is indisputable that the Minnesotan who has had the greatest impact on national politics is Hubert Humphrey. Nicknamed the Happy Warrior, Humphrey was Vice President of the United States from 1965 to 1969 under President Johnson and was a Democratic standard bearer for President in 1968. He served for 23 years in the U.S. Senate, including as Majority Whip. His legislative accomplishments include the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and proposing Medicare and the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. Humphrey always sought bipartisan support for his legislative goals, and often his biggest antagonists were in his own party, particularly on civil rights. This funding would pay for a new statue to be made using as the base the Humphrey statue that stands on the Capitol grounds, for the statue to be shipped to D.C., and to ship the existing statue of Mr. Maurer Rice back to Minnesota to be displayed in his namesake of Rice County. I believe it is time that our state update this important representation in our nation's capital to reflect the history that has transpired since 1916. Appreciate the bipartisan support on this bill, and would ask that this committee support sending Hubert Humphrey to represent us in the U.S. Capitol.
Thank you. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Long. I had a conversation with you about this, and I just hopeful we can move forward with this because you've assured me we're going to get a better spot, and hopefully, you know, that spot is more prominent than what the statue is now.
Leader Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers. Yes, for those who have visited the Capitol, Maria Sanford is displayed in a very prominent spot in the main hall as folks are coming in for the tour. Unfortunately, Mr. Maurer Rice is in sort of the Hall of Forgotten Heroes in a back corner, so he's pretty difficult to find. But I do think that Hubert Humphrey would be given a prominent location.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Did we not hear this last time? I thought I remember hearing this and approving it, and it didn't get funded. Is that why we're here seeing it again?
Representative Scraba, yeah, we heard it last biennium and it did not make it through in the final bill, and so that's why we're hearing it again this year. See no further questions. Quick closing comments, Leader Long.
I appreciate the committee's time.
Thank you, Leader Long. Next up, we have Representative Ryer, House File 1860. Please proceed.
Morning, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, committee members. Thanks for taking the time to talk about House File 1860. It's the Scott and Dakota County Regional a household hazardous waste and recycling facility. This project serves an important regional need, making it easier for residents of a broad area to recycle and dispose of hazardous waste household items. It's also a regional investment. The ask today is for $8 million, with the counties contributing the remainder. The total cost will exceed the $25 million cited in the materials. The counties will be absorbing that and not asking for additional state funds. So today, Nikki Stewart, Director of Environmental Resources for Dakota County, and Kate Sedlacek, Environmental Manager for Scott County, are here with us to provide additional information.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Representative. Good morning, Chairs Lee and Franson and committee members. As she said, I'm Nikki Stewart, Environmental Resources Director at Dakota County, and also with me is Kate Sedlacek, with Environmental Manager from Scott County. In the room, I also have Dave Magnuson, our Dakota County Program Supervisor. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to House File 1860 and our Regional Household Hazardous Waste Facility, a partnership between Dakota and Scott counties. Our counties already have a joint powers agreement in place for the design and construction of this facility. It will manage household hazardous waste, such as paints, pesticides, and auto fluids, and include a drop-off for recyclables, such as plastic bottles and cans, but also hard-to-manage materials, such as mattresses and scrap metal. Without this critical infrastructure, these materials often end up in the ditch, poured in the drain, or tossed in the trash to the landfill. This project is shovel-ready. We are requesting $8 million from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Capital Assistance Grant for this $25 million project. Thanks to the 2021 Minnesota Legislature, we received $2 million for Phase 1 to help fund the land purchase. The counties are committed to a match of $15 million for the remaining amount. Dakota County at $11.36 million, Scott County at $3.64 million. We have the land, and now are requesting the remaining $8 million the counties are eligible for to construct this facility. Both Dakota and Scott counties have their own household hazardous waste facilities. However, our facility in Dakota County, called the Recycling Zone in Eagan, is at max capacity. Our current site, designed in 1998 for 15,000 cars annually, now 26 years later, is managing over 69,000 cars. Waste managed has increased from 830,000 pounds to 4.3 million pounds. Scott County will hit its capacity at its facility by 2030. This new facility is proposed to be located in Lakeville, Minnesota, and promoted and available to all residents in the Twin Cities through agreements with the other metro counties. Each year we wait, costs increase with this project more than doubling since our last award. If funding is received, construction can start later this year in 2025 and open to residents early in 2027. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, or Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Real quickly, I think this is a great project. Do you plan on charging any fees for people to drop off? I know in Plymouth we do for some things.
Director.
Chair and members, we do charge for some materials, but otherwise it's open to our residents at no cost for the household hazardous waste materials. Some of those problem materials, such as, say, mattresses, there would be a charge because there's a cost for us to manage that material.
Quick closing comments, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we will have Representative Falconer, House File 720, and then after that, Representative Hollins, House File 1314, and then Chair Fisher, House File 2854. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen. Thank you so much for having us in today to hear about House File 720. This would appropriate $15 million to build out a shared community space around a transit station in the Opus area of the city of Minnetonka. As you hear from Mayor Wearsome here, this investment will help transform the area into a regional asset not just for residents living in the area, of which there are 1,000 affordable units in that the West Metro desperately needs, as Minnetonka continues to focus on the affordable housing crisis in the state, but also for the tens of thousands of employees and visitors through the Opus area each year. This truly is a regional asset benefiting all communities in this area, and I thank you for taking the time to hear and learn about this proposal and bonding request. With that, I'll turn it over to my testifier, Minnetonka Mayor Wiersum.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you, Chair Franzen, and thank you, committee members, and thank you, Representative Falconer, for supporting this legislation. My name is Brad Wiersum. I'm the mayor of the city of Minnetonka. I've been doing, I'm in my second term as mayor since 2017, and I've been on the council for city council for 15 years. So I know Minnetonka well, and I'm here today to talk about a project that is really important, not just for the city of Minnetonka, but for the entire West Metro, and that is the Opus Public Space Project. The Opus area of Minnetonka is a mixed-use community that features residential apartments, employment centers, 6 miles of off-road trails, and open natural areas. It was completed about 50 years ago and is experiencing a revitalization sparked by the impending arrival of light rail transit, which will run through the area and includes a light rail station in the area. Opus is currently home to several regional employers. And interestingly, there are over 15,000 employees in that area and 4,000 residents living and working in the area. So it's clearly vital to our city. Over the last 10 years, new development has added 2,000 new units of additional housing, over a third of which, and I'm very proud of this, over a third of which is affordable housing for individuals, families, and seniors. Bonding funds would be used to build out a five-acre central plaza and community park next to the transit stop. The project is integral to transforming what is a fairly low-density office park, fully integrating the light rail investment into the broader community, and making Opus a regional asset for visitors traveling through the park via public transit. Because of the demographic diversity the new housing is bringing to the area, it is also important that the city provide an open park space and meaningful recreation activities for all of the residents. Minnetonka is lucky enough to have a robust business presence in the city, and we are proud to be a net contributor to the state economy. This means we are incredibly thoughtful about when we come to the legislature to ask for support. The $725,000 in bonding dollars we received in 2023 for planning this project, the Opus Public Space Development, was our first time receiving state funding of this nature. And we are here only to ask this additional funding because we have exhausted other funding options available to support this project. So I want to thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and the rest of the committee for your time and consideration of this. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I believe your packet does contain a one-pager with information on the project. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Iyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here today. I've watched and wondered what was going to happen with that area. Just curious, you have a $15 million ask. What's the total cost for the project? Thank you,
Mayor.
And I'm going to turn to the total ask is $15 million, or the total project is $15 million. $30 million. Excuse me. We're asking. I'm going to ask Mr. Funk, Mike Funk, to help me with that question.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed to answering the question.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Mike Funk, spelled F-U-N-K. I am the city manager for the city of Minnetonka. Representative, to answer your question, the estimated total project cost is $30 million, and we are seeking $15 million in funding. Thank you.
See no other questions. Quick closing comments.
Thank you so much for considering this this request. I think it's a great project. It's a regional asset. It really kind of checks off a bunch of important priorities of affordable housing, open space, accessibility to the light rail system, and it'll be a big benefit to the region. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Falconer. Next up, Representative Hollins, House File 1314, and then Chair Fisher, House File 2854.
Thank you,
Welcome,
Chair.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present this important request. Today I'm bringing forward House File 1314, which would provide resources to replace state park or state recreation area in the event that a state park or state recreation area is closed. As most of you know, we have a finite number of these special places, just 64 state parks and 9 state recreation areas. If a state park is closed, another should be created to replace it. The 25-year Parks and Trail Legacy Plan set a target of creating 5 new state parks or recreation areas between 2009 and 2034. To date, there's been a net loss of 1 state park. House File 1314 provides resources to ensure that these heavily visited state facilities are replaced if the closure takes place. While the bill is requesting $10 million, I'm very aware of the demands on the bonding bill and the limited resources that we're all working with, and so I'm begging you to include whatever funding you can. State parks are our responsibility to fund as legislators, and all of our constituents use these treasured places. They provide significant economic benefit to local communities across the state, and we don't want future generations to have fewer state parks than we do. I have a testifier here from the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota to give some brief remarks.
Bogan, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Andrew Oftedal. I'm with the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota. We're a nonprofit founded in 1954 to acquire, protect, and enhance critical land for the public's use and benefit. First, I want to thank Representative Hollins for authoring this bill, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen for the opportunity to testify this morning in support of this bill and in support of our state parks and state recreation areas. State parks are among the most special places in Minnesota. They host over 11 million visitors every year and deliver educational programs to nearly 200,000 people every year. They preserve vital habitat for nearly 300 rare plants and animals. They provide affordable access to our lakes, to our prairies, to our hills, our rivers. They preserve some of the most iconic natural features our state has to offer, and demand for them is only growing. Permit sales in 2024 were 61% higher than they were in 2012. Despite their importance and their popularity, there has not been a major expansion to our state park system in nearly 15 years. There's still nearly 40,000 acres of private inholdings within our state park system. And last year, 2 state parks, Upper Sioux Agency and Hill Annex Mine, were deauthorized and closed to the public. Both of those closures were very unique circumstances, and we understood and supported both of those decisions. But they still represented a loss of 1,900 acres to the system as a whole. And this means that we now have fewer state parks and recreation areas than we did 16 years ago when the Legacy Amendment was passed. In the wake of those park closings, we think now is the time for transformational new additions to our state park system. This bill provides funding for that to happen and gives the DNR the flexibility it would need to acquire critical parkland when and where it becomes available. Again, thank you for your time. Thank you for Representative Hollins for authoring this important bill, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you. See no questions. Quick closing comments, Representative Hollins.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and to present this bill. I'll note that I'm trying to hit every single state park in the state of Minnesota, and I've made it through a third of them, but I would love some more. So please do fund this.
Thank you. Thanks. Next up, House File 2854, Chair Fisher. And after that, we have House File 1389, Representative Kozlowski, and then House File 1465, Representative Allen. Welcome, Chair Fisher. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair France, for the opportunity to present House File 2854. As a reference, there is an amendment out there as a reference just to clarify where this exact location is for this improvement. This is to address a road improvement in an area that's very dangerous right now. The city of Little Canada is basically split in half by 35E, and there's basically just one street that connects the two halves. It has seen a lot of traffic over time, and it's become very dangerous for people to navigate there. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Councilperson Kwapik.
Welcome back to the House. Councilmember, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the committee. My name is Chris Kwapik, and I have the honor of serving as a council member for the City of Little Canada. On behalf of our mayor, Tom Fisher, and the rest of our city council and staff, I want to thank you for the opportunity to share information about the City of Little Canada's Community Connectivity Project. This project, in partnership with Ramsey County and MnDOT, is a city-initiated and city-led four-part infrastructure improvement project designed to increase safety, connectivity, and efficiency for both motorized and non-motorized users within the project area. It's arguably the largest infrastructure project that the city has pursued, which will not only provide much-needed relief for the community members of Little Canada, but benefit commuters and businesses who access this vital regional roadway. The Little Canada Road Corridor has been the subject of complaints for years. It has a notable crash and congestion problem. If nothing changes, the problem will persist and worsen over time. Identifying viable solutions within the corridor has taken years due to the complicated nature of the area and the city's desire to minimize impacts to both properties and businesses. In fact, over the past year, we have considered multiple designs that varied in feasibility, which elicited strong opinions from local businesses and residents. Thanks to their feedback and ongoing conversations between our engineers and state and federal agencies, we believe that we have finally arrived at a solution that works for everyone. Generally, the project will convert an all-way stop, which includes confusing double signal intersection, into two roundabouts to improve traffic flow and vehicle and pedestrian safety. Specifically, I would like to draw your attention to the handout that was just provided and the intersection of I-35E and Little Canada Road highlighted in yellow. The location of the city's frontage road to I-35E and Little Canada Road interchange is what adds the significant complexity and problems to this area. This project only became possible when the city applied to three state and federal grant programs and was successful in receiving all three, a testament to the regional impact of this project. The total grant funding secured to date is $7 million, which covers roughly two-thirds of the estimated project costs. The remainder of the costs are shared between the city and county, which is why we are here today. Despite being successful with these grants, roughly a third of the project remains. The Little Canada Community Connectivity Project is in the final design phase, and construction is anticipated to occur in 2026, fingers crossed. We feel that this project will set up this critical corridor for better safety, accessibility, and future growth and investment for years to come. Mr. Chair, once again, thank you for your consideration of House File 2854. Myself, along with our city engineer, Eric Seberg, we would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question about how this connects with the trail system. I see it going off the map in both directions, and if you could speak to that. Thank you.
Yeah, happy to. Chair Lee, Representative Ryer, that's a great question. To be fair, this currently does not connect to our current trails. What we would do is hopefully be able to go to the north to connect to our waterworks trail. We actually have a proposed project in the future for a pedestrian bridge to connect multiple trails because, again, this is the only landmass that connects the east side and west side of the river or of the town over the highway, and we hope to eventually make a separate pedestrian bridge that would actually connect some of the regional trails, but that's a separate project. This one is definitely much more pressing.
So I have a quick question for you, council member, or to the city engineer. So I see here that you have potential alignment for BRT, and so will this project accommodate that so that in the future you don't have to come back to the legislature for redigging of the route or whatnot?
So I might have to refer to our city administrator, but I'm not sure if the BRT would go through this actual route that would actually be along Rice Street, but I'm going to
please identify yourself and proceed.
Right. Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franz, and my name is Eric Seberg, city engineer for the City of Little Canada. The note about the BRT on the map is mostly to identify the regional significance of this corridor. The BRT will go down Rice Street, which is maybe a half mile to the west.
Got it. Thank you. Quick closing comments, Chair Fisher.
Thank you, committee, and Chair Lee and Chair Franz for the opportunity to present the bill. I hope you'll keep this in consideration when you're doing your funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, House File 1389, Representative Koslowski.
Thank
Welcome. Please proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairs Lee and Chair Franzen and members Miigwech for the opportunity to present House File 1389, which is a bipartisan bill that returns the Cloquet Forestry through a land transfer of certain land owned to the University of Minnesota. In 1909, the Cloquet Forestry Center was established on 2,000 acres and expanded until 2003 to where it sits at about 3,400 acres. The CFC is wholly unique, and that is from any university property, and that is located within the entirely within the tribal boundaries. The land was originally reserved for the Fond du Lac Band under the 1854 Treaty of LaPointe. However, due to a pair of federal laws in the 1800s that permitted the government to parcel out and transfer that land to logging companies where it's used for extensive logging operations. So today the university has acquired that 3,400 acres that came from over 100 years ago from the Department of the Interior under the Dawes Act at a tiny fraction of the appraised value. So we're here before you today, again, at the request of the Fond du Lac Band and the university have been engaged in ongoing dialogue. They've also been in collaboration with industry leaders, with the public, with state agencies, and many more about this return. And the bill is really technical in nature that is before you. It's a complex real estate process, and in part because the Cloquet Forestry land isn't wholly owned by the university. And so there are a number of parcels that we need to get in Section 1 deals with getting it into one package that can prepare for the eventual transfer. And Section 2 before you deals with the appropriating the money. There's a bond that needs to be defeased for $1.3 million. And I'll just also note before I turn it over to the testifier that recently the university and the band published a joint statement, really making sure that we're focused on the return, but also that the continuation of the research, the education, all of the amazing things that are happening would actually continue to go forward into the future and strengthen industry, strengthen the band's relationships and the university's mission, and that is not going away. In fact, will be strengthened through this partnership. So this time I'd like to turn it over to Reed LeBeau, who is with me here today.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Reed LeBeau on behalf of the Fond du Lac Band. I don't have much more to add other than what Representative Keselowski mentioned. I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee might have. But I would just highlight that we have been in conversations with multiple stakeholders and will continue to as we try to work on some language that makes sure that this is a transparent process so that the public knows exactly what's going on.
Thank you. Chair Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just out of curiosity, Representative Klozelski, will you, or was this, I don't think it was, but was this heard in state and local government?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Franzen, for the question. And this has not gone to state and local government. We're continuing to have work through a number of things there with looking at a potential extension. Right now, the bill and the memorandum of understanding with the university and the band is that if there were in a future sale, that would need to have a six-year warning and notification to the parties, but we're looking at extending that out and continuing conversation with timber and logging industry and others, but has not been heard of there yet. This biennium.
Chair Franzen.
Thank you. For disclosure, I'm on the bill myself. However, I still have concerns that I've chatted with Mr. LeBeau about, and I've been in talks with the forestry, and my preference would be to have some language in there that would give, I guess, some comfort language that if this land is transferred back to Fond du Lac, that we would not be hearing in 5 years, 10 years now that we're going to have to now repurpose the forestry center, and then the forestry center is going to come back to the legislature for a whole new system elsewhere, and I don't want to see that happen. So if we can work on language for that, if that makes sense.
Mr. LeBeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Co-Chair Franzen. We've heard you loud and clear, and we've heard from the industry as well, and we will continue to work on language. And I feel hopeful and confident that we'd be able to work on some language that will address that concern.
Chair Franzen.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you, Mr. LeBeau and Representative Klozelski as well for that. And
My concerns would be alleviated with that sort of agreement here as well. So I know it shouldn't be a complicated issue, a controversial issue. However, nothing is non-controversial in this building, right? So thank you.
Quick closing comments, Representative Keselowski.
All right. Well, members and Chair Franzen agreed. I think these are common sense things that we can continue to work through and just ask for your support. You know, I was taught in our communities that you leave something better than you found it, and I think we can find a pathway to do that with this and seek your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Allen, House File 1465, and then after that, we'll go with Representative Reimer, House File 3103, and then Representative Carroll, House File 778. Welcome to your committee, Representative Allen. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Co-Chair Franzen, and Capital Investment Committee members. Thank you for taking the time to hear my bill, House File 1465, for the Viaduct Park in Faribault. This park is located on the edge of two historic areas in the downtown Faribault area, along with the Highway 60 Viaduct. This project has taken years of planning and public engagement to get to this point. And at this time, I'll turn it over to my two testifiers, Paul Penske from Faribault Park and Rec, and Mark Duchesne from the Faribault City Engineer.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairs Franzen and Lee and committee. Thank you for allowing us to speak with you today. My name is Paul Panosky. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Faribault, and with me is Mark Duchesne, our Director of Engineering for the City of Faribault. We'd like to present with you the funding request for Viaduct Park in Faribault. This is a new 2.7-acre park that we're building in the community. It is considered to be a community gathering space featuring an outdoor skating surface, splash pad, and a large grass green area. This is a new park with the brainchild of a community task force. Took us several years to get to this particular point. The park is located in the historic downtown area along Highway 60 in Faribault. Faribault has the second largest historic district, and so this is a great addition to that particular area. This park is centered around mixed use in our central business district and includes commercial and residential uses. In recent years, we've added nearly 250 high-density residential units catering to a full spectrum of incomes and accessibility by all modes of transportation. This includes two state trails that connect in the city of Faribault, the Sakata Singing Hill State Trail, as well as the Milltown State Trail. So this will access both of those trails. This plan has been a dream for years and is listed in three master plans for the City of Faribault: the Parks, Trails, and Open Space Master Plan, the Downtown Master Plan, and the City Comprehensive Plan. This project is being constructed in phases. Phase one is currently underway and consists of the splash pad, a four-season park pavilion, and site improvements at the cost of $6.3 million. The City is working with our local Faribault Foundation, a local nonprofit, and has taken the initiative to offer businesses and organizations the opportunity to contribute to the project. This portion of this first phase is scheduled to open later this early fall or winter for us. Phase two is a $5.29 million addition to the park. It's a 17,000 square foot outdoor covered refrigerated ice skating rink. This phase will become the most iconic feature of the park and will truly make it a four-season park with a substantial regional draw. The open-sided covered amenity will allow for year-round multi-generational use beyond just ice skating to include covered space for arts and crafts, concerts, and other recreational events. This is the reason that we're here today. We are seeking funding to help for this phase two of this park. We are currently seeking $2.9615 million in funding to help fill the financial gap that we are encountering. We would like to begin this phase in the fall of 2025 or early in the spring of 2026 once our funding has been fully secured. The primary purpose of this development is to improve the quality of life for the Faribault residents and to increase the regional draw to our community. This entire complex will be fully ADA compliant. It is designed to be affordable and usable regardless of age or socioeconomic background. It is planned to be free of charge to use the ice rink or the splash pad. Being ADA compliant and free to the public, this will be a very attractive community amenity. There is a need for downtown area park to not only increase the vitality of the immediate area, but to more importantly provide a landmark to help facilitate positive future growth within the historic district. Thank you for your consideration, and to Keith Allen for sponsoring this event, this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Representative Allen.
Thank you again, chairs, committee members, for taking time to hear House File 1465, and I would urge your support.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 3103. Representative Reimer, welcome to your committee. Representative Reimer, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Co-Chair Franzen, and members of the committee. Today I am presenting House File 3103, which is for the city of Taylor's Falls. For those of you who have not been, you're missing out. Taylor's Falls is a wonderful city with majestic views of the St. Croix River. We've got an amazing trailhead up there, wonderful parks, and it's really a wonderful city to come visit. And with that visiting, there's strain on public infrastructure, and today we're going to be talking about a sewer line repair. So with me today, I have Mayor Brandon Weiberg and the city engineer Jay Guzik. And with that, I would like the mayor to turn it over to the mayor to talk a little bit more about this project.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Co-Chair Franzen. My name is Brandon Weiberg. I'm the mayor of the city of Taylor's Falls. I stand before you today to discuss a critical issue that affects our beloved community of Taylor's Falls, the urgent need to replace our aging forced sewer main. As you may know, the city of Taylor's Falls is facing significant challenges in its sanitary sewer collection system, which relies on a fragile 8-inch cast iron force main that has served us for decades. This nearly 4,500-foot pipe plays a vital role in transporting our wastewater from every home and business in our city. However, in reality, it is failing right now. We are requesting $1.5 million in state bonding funds to replace this force main. This is about more than just a pipe. It's about protecting our public safety, our health, preserving our environment, and ensuring the reliability for all the residents, businesses, and tourists that we serve every year. First and foremost, by replacing this failing pipe, we can prevent sewer backups and overflows that threaten both our homes and streets. This is not just about plumbing. It's about the safety and well-being of our community. Moreover, we must consider in environmental implications. The current force main poses a risk of sewage spills near our nationally protected St. Croix Falls or St. Croix River waterway. We owe it to ourselves and future generations to protect this precious resource. And in addition to safeguarding health and environment, this project will also improve reliability of our sewer system itself. The new pipe will be made of a modern corrosion-resistant material. It will include essential surge control features. This means fewer emergency repairs for us, reduced operational risks, and ultimately cost savings for the city. While we are fully committed to this project and ready to bond if the state funding is unavailable, I must emphasize that it would place a significant financial burden on my residents in our community. We need your support now to secure the necessary funding and keep Taylor's Falls wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Representative Reimer.
Thank you all for the opportunity to hear this bill and hope that it'll be included in the final one.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Carroll, House File 778. Welcome to your committee, Representative Carroll. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Franzen. This is a wonderful bill, a wonderful opportunity to continue to invest in Plymouth because it will continue to invest in the state. Plymouth is an economic engine for the state. It's the fourth largest economy, largest med tech sector, and by keeping it competitive and viable, it'll help the state. And with me today is our city manager, Dave Callister, and I'll turn it over to him.
Welcome, city manager. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, chairs and committee members. My name is Dave Callister, and I am the Plymouth City Manager. Thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about our project for Plymouth City Center. The project itself is currently $52 million. We've already spent $15 million on it, but the remaining portion is $52 million. We're seeking $26 million from the state for the project. The money would support infrastructure improvements needed to pave the way for vibrant redevelopment in the Plymouth City Center. roughly defined as the geographic center of Plymouth, 1 mile west of 494 and Highway 55. The area contains entertainment venues, sports and fitness facilities, businesses, restaurants, and other regional destinations. Our outdoor amphitheater welcomes thousands of visitors for concerts and events, and our regional ice center also hosts state and national hockey tournaments that bring visiting teams and fans from all across the country to Plymouth City Center. An example of this is each national tournament that we host, and we've hosted a few of those in the past, has an estimated economic impact of $1.2 million for a 5 or 6 day period. This benefits area businesses and boosts the local economy for our residents. Investment in this regionally significant public infrastructure is needed to cultivate a vibrant and welcoming downtown. The funding will strengthen mobility and transit connectivity, allow for bus rapid transit, improve walkability and pedestrian safety, satisfy demand at the regional ice center, and also help with environmental sustainability, provide parking, support a mix of housing opportunities, create a community gathering space, enhance the one that's there. And the proposed infrastructure specifically, we've already taken care of Plymouth Boulevard in front of this. That project is done. But the future components that relate to this budget or bonding bill include a regional bonding to modernize stormwater infrastructure and offer redevelopment flexibility that will result in increased density and mobility through and also new housing opportunities and the bus rapid transit line, which is in the planning stage at the current time. It also includes a construction of a public parking ramp to alleviate parking issues in the area and strengthen transit connectivity and pave the way for the BRT. It would also create a community gathering space that allows for activation of the whole corridor and walkable pedestrian-friendly access to restaurants, retail, and recreation. The infrastructure improvements will offer regional benefits with amenities and facilities that draw tens of thousands of visitors annually. Plymouth City Center serves people well beyond the city limits. Chairs and committee members, this request is very important for our city's future. Investing in transit and mobility, regional recreation, and stormwater infrastructure in the area will help pave the way for walkable, vibrant redevelopment, bringing more restaurants, retail, and foot traffic to downtown Plymouth. These improvements will also bolster affordable housing and transit opportunities. We respectfully request that you support this funding request, and thank you for the opportunity.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carroll, just a question about priorities within the project. You've got the four items, the ponding, the ramp, the expansion, and the roadway. How would you prioritize among those if the full amount were not to be available? Thank you.
City Manager.
Chairs and committee members, the priorities would, number one, be the regional ponding, where it took care of the streets last year. The regional ponding would be, number one, the public parking ramp, and the ice center improvements would probably go together since they're in the same area. And then the community gathering spaces are going to be phased in over time a little bit more along the way. So those would be the priorities if the full amount was granted. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, closing comments, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Just simply put, investing in Plymouth is investing in the state, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Carroll. Next up, Chair Howard, House File 691. Welcome, Chair Howard. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franson. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill before the committee. I will be extremely brief to save time for Mayor Supple. But the city of Richfield has multiple thoroughfares through our district that serve the entire region, and this proposal would provide resources to help fund the most dangerous one of those here in Richfield. We recognize that funds are limited, and so this is a scalable project, but it's a very worthwhile one for the entire region. With that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and committee members. Thank you for taking the time to hear us today in support of House File 691, the Nicollet Avenue Project.
My name is Mary Suppel, and I'm the mayor of Richfield, and I'm joined by our Public Works Director, Kristen Asher. Nicollet Avenue was built in 1961 and is overdue for a reconstruction. Not only is the infrastructure wearing out, but the design is outdated, resulting in the most dangerous county road in Richfield. Currently, Nicollet Avenue in Richfield has narrow sidewalks directly adjacent to the roadway, which become even narrower and difficult to navigate when there is snow on the ground. Nicollet also experiences high traffic speeds, has deteriorating roadways, curbs, and sidewalks, and has subpar pedestrian lighting and crossing amenities. All of these issues become even more problematic given how busy it is along the 1.4-mile project area. There are two schools, three churches, 13 small businesses, more than 100 residential properties, a Hennepin County Library, the Richfield Community Center, an inclusive playground that draws more than 200 regional visitors each day in warmer weather, and Richfield High School just four blocks to the west. While Nicollet makes up only 1.5% of local roadway miles in Richfield, it's the location of 12% of the crashes in the city. That's 226 crashes from 2018 to 2023. Regional trips make up most traffic along the corridor, with data indicating only 10% of vehicle trips are purely local. On a typical day, there are almost 900 pedestrian and bike crossings and 200 bus boardings. Why do we need state help with funding? Put simply, Richfield is tapped out when it comes to funding regional transportation projects. We have already invested our available resources in rehabilitating our local roads and would not be here today if it were not a project of regional significance. Richfield's generous contributions to regional roadway projects over the last two decades is breaking the bank. In the last 20 years, Richfield has contributed $49 million to state and county road projects. That's over half of total spending on road projects, even though state and county roads make up only 20% of lane mileage in and around Richfield. The planned improvements to Nicollet will make this important corridor safer and more effective for all modes for decades to come. Thank you to Representative Howard for carrying this bill, and to Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and the committee for allowing me to testify in support of House File 691. Director Asher and I would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mayor. So just one question maybe to the director. Have you guys applied for the local roads improvement program that we typically fund through this committee, or no, for this project?
Chair Lee, thank you. My name is Kristen Asher, Public Works Director for Richfield. Are you speaking to the regional solicitation funds through the Met Council?
Mr. Lee, is that the program that we fund?
Mr. Chair and members, the regional solicitation refers to federal funds that go to the Metropolitan Council for that's directed by the Transportation Advisory Board. The Transportation and the Capital Investment Committees in the past have funded a statewide local road improvement program. That's, I believe, what you were referring to, Mr.
So that's
Chair.
The one, Director, that's the one that I was referring to. Have you guys applied for
we
that?
We have not applied for that. I know we are not eligible for the federal funds, so I'm sure we have looked at that, and if we were eligible, we would apply for that, but we can circle back and look.
Okay, thank you. Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wore this bow tie in your honor, sir.
Appreciate it.
I missed the part that you talked about. You don't have local share, so the request is part of the local share. Can you, it went over me a little bit, but I know you had stated it, why there's no local share and that there was abundant other projects that you've invested in. If you could restate that, either the mayor or one of the testifiers, Mr.
Sure.
Chair.
Director.
Thank you, Representative. I think what Mary was speaking to, the mayor was speaking to, was in the past, there's local cost participation with the county and the state projects, and we have major roadways through Richfield that are all built at the same time, all need reconstruction. And so we've been tapped out with our local cost share before. We've bankrupted essentially our municipal state aid fund year after year for these projects. We've done multiple year bonding just to cover the local match for one of the projects. And so here we are with another need that we support. And we have a lot of local needs that we have postponed due to those projects, and here this would just be another one. So,
Chair Kosnick.
I think that's sufficient. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Closing comments, Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Lee, members of the committee. I really appreciate the time and appreciate my testifiers for making the strong pitch for what's a really valuable project in our community, but the whole region. Thank you.
Last bill of the agenda for today, House File 1068. Chair Vane. Welcome to the committee, Chair Vane. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm just trying to catch my breath a little bit here. All right, so just want to thank the committee for your time to hear this bill. This bill was already introduced and included in the bonding bill last biennium, so we are here today to also make the same request, and I will defer to my testifiers to speak to the bill.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Reg Edwards. I'm the city manager of Brooklyn Center, and also with me is Jesse Anderson, who's our community development director. So again, thank you, Honorable Chair Lee and Honorable Chair Franson and committee members for the time of hearing from Brooklyn Center. I also want to thank Representative Vane for your work in introducing this bill and your tireless work that you do for Brooklyn Center. The mayor was intending to be here, Mayor Grace, but she's unable due to a medical incident, so she was unable to be here. But again, happy to be here. Brooklyn Center is a community with a great deal of need. The community has experienced significant disinvestments over the last several decades, which has eroded our tax base. The Opportunity Site will expand Brooklyn Center's entire tax base and provide many benefits to the region. We have successfully secured approximately $3.4 million in grants to initiate crucial infrastructure development. The proposed $3 million in funding will enable us to proceed with the essential infrastructure, including parkway and public stormwater pond. These investments are vital for enhancing and development of potential site and improving both vehicle and pedestrian access. We estimate that full development will bring approximately $280 million of investments to this site. As you consider our request, please keep in mind a few important facts. Brooklyn Center is the most diverse community in the region, with 57% of its population of people of color, and over a quarter of the population are foreign-born. Brooklyn Center has the lowest median income in the region and the highest property tax rate in Hennepin County. Brooklyn Center residents pay more for the exact same services as our surrounding suburbs. This is an issue of economic resiliency and affects the entire region. Yet despite this, Brooklyn Center is rich in cultural diversity and has a resilient entrepreneurial spirit. We are home to more small businesses per capita than any other suburban city in Hennepin County. The 80-acre Opportunity Site redevelopment area is the most significant development for the city. The city has made significant investments in acquisitions and demolitions of properties within the site to achieve our goal. The entire project will bring 4,000 new units of housing, 130,000 square feet of retail space, and 400,000 square feet of employment opportunities. This project will expand Brooklyn Center's entire tax base by 12%. The goals of Opportunity Site is to create a downtown center, a signature destination that offers green space and amenities that will drive the city's future economic growth by serving the entire region. With that said, Chair Lee and Chair Franson and committee members want to thank you, and we'll stand for questions that you may have.
Thank you, City Manager. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Chair Vane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for another opportunity to hear this bill. Our city, this is an important first step to further developing our city, as we are a landlocked. There's no space for us to grow besides going up. And so this will be very critical in helping us develop further. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Vane. So members, let's conclude the agenda for today. And we do have a quorum. And so can we have a motion to approve the minutes, Representative Sexton? Representative Sexton, move approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motions prevail and the minutes are approved. Members, we conclude our agenda, and Chair Franzen will have the gavel tomorrow. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. The meeting is adjourned.